This is Christoph Kisun, and you're listening to Navigating Diversity, where we explore how human beings differ, yet can find ways to relate to one another in an increasingly xenophobic socio-political climate. Last week, guest Chadwick Pearsall and I discussed the topics, the hidden power of dreaming in social movements, and confronting the shared trauma of our past. You can catch our conversation at kisu.org/programs/navigatingdiversity. This week, we are continuing our conversation around racism in the United States and the Black Lives Matter movement, and discussing the topics, social movements in the age of social media and developing empathy through education. To help us navigate these topics today, we are joined by Alma Jam, doctoral student at Idaho State University and local social activist in human trafficking. Hi, Alma. How are you doing today?
I'm good, Christoph. How are you?
I'm good. Thank you for joining me today over the Zoom conversation in the studio.
Thank you for having me. I appreciate it.
Absolutely. So, Alma, are you on social media?
I am.
What role do you see social media playing in the Black Lives Matter movement today and in this general conversation we've been having about racism in the United States?
Oh, man. I mean, even down to just the personal level, I think social media in general has just taken the place of social interactions today. When it comes to the movement, it really is a significant instrument in how widespread people have been able to relate to issues around the world and connect with them or oppose them. Social media literally has changed the way we view and interact with things. It's just taken over our social interaction.
Yeah, we have more conversations now probably over social media than in real life.
Absolutely. And I think that can be good as well as it can be bad. But for the most part, yes, I agree with you. Those conversations have really unfolded on social media, and it's actually also played this part where it makes people comfortable and safe in view in, you know, putting out their opinions about what they think with events like this. And in a way, that's good. And I guess it can also be bad, like I said. So,
right. 100%. Yeah. You know, I think this Black Lives Matter movement, you know, it's been going on for years. It did not begin a week and a half ago, as some people probably think, right? But I think the fire with which it came back, you know, like the resurgence of it and how it kind of swept the national media and everything and international media, it really spoke to the power of social media to spread information and to allow people to see the reality on the ground. You know, we can talk about cops shooting Black boys and girls all day, but until you really see it in front of you with your own eyes, it makes a difference. And I think that's really the gift that social media gave us in this moment. When that George Floyd video dropped, devastating. There is no way you can watch that video and really watch it and not unsee it.
I agree. It was traumatizing. I think the video in itself brought the world together. For once, we could all relate that something tragic happened and that tragedy had to be addressed. That's the impact of what social media brought to the movement.
Yeah, it was a huge, huge wake-up call, I think, for most of the world. You know, I think of, and this really is the first time in human civilization where we've had social media, you know, that we've had smartphones, and I can just record a conversation with a cop and I could put it up online in 2 minutes, you know? I think I saw a thread on Twitter and it was like over 400 videos of cops using like undue force against peaceful protesters. That wasn't possible when MLK was marching. That wasn't possible when India and Pakistan was on the verge of separation. And it really makes me think about, well, what does that mean? What are the implications of that?
I agree with you. And I'm glad you brought that up because I can relate. I mean, there's a war going on right now in my country. And, you know, I'm here in the States, but I can, because of social media, I can see what's going on in the country and how, you know, it's devastating the people and, you know, just devastating the whole country and its people. And so this impact of social media is beyond what we just think it is. I think sometimes we just downplay the impact social media is, but it's quite significant, especially when we're addressing movements like this or events like this. And
it plays a massive role.
Yes. Like, we can't excuse not being able to understand what people are going through around the world, because if you really were, if you really wanted to engage in that platform, you can find a way through social media. I mean, there's just, it's everywhere. It's taking over, and we're bringing, people are being able to bring on this live feeds of events that are
yes.
taking, and we change how humanity connects and brought to light some of the things that we necessarily were not able to relate to.
Yeah, no, yeah. I think you raise a really good point. We do downplay social media quite a bit. I think we think it's just this thing that is attached to our lives. But really and truly, it is attached to everything in our lives. Yeah. And it creates a huge opportunity, you know, all over the world when people are creating resistance movements to authoritarian regimes or whatever the case was. They're using social media to organize, spreading information through WhatsApp and an airdrop, right? So it's kind of really cool that young people and anybody who has access to the technology can really participate in these really cool new innovative ways. It's a whole new arena that we get to fight in.
Yes, it is. It is. And but you have to pick. You have to be really conscious about how you're deciphering this information that you get from social media and how you're interacting with it, because as much as significant as social media is, it has its dangers too. And
it's all tracked, it's all recorded.
Absolutely.
All that data has been mined and sold to somebody for some agenda.
And even so, like, being, putting yourself out there, because when you're on social media, you're not just available to your close network, you're available to the world. So it's dangerous. It's dangerous to be on social media. It's dangerous for the fact that not only are you making yourself vulnerable to certain people that could be out there, it's risky for the fact that the type of information that you take in from social media could really affect how you view certain topics and events that are happening around the world. So as much as we utilize social media today, I think we also have to put on that critical thinking mind and always being conscious and aware that not everything that we see is what it is.
Yes.
Not every person that we meet is who they are. It can span and in all spectrums of what danger could be and also what good can come out of it. So
absolutely. I think it's a whole new world, and it's something we'll have to grapple with, and I encourage everybody to take this as an opportunity to think more critically, as you said, Alma, about their role in everything that's going on and how does social media impact that. This is Christoph Kassoon, and you're listening to Navigating Diversity. Guest Alma Jam and I have been discussing the topic, social movements in the age of social media. Stay tuned as we continue to navigate diversity and discuss the topic, developing empathy through education.
This is KISU-FM Pocatello, Idaho Falls, Rexburg. Also available on your Amazon or Google smart speaker with the command Play KISU.
So the topic of the night is developing empathy through education. Alma, what does that statement mean to you?
Understanding, being open enough to understand how another person's perspective, even in your goal to maybe enlighten them about something or provide a different stance of insight or perspective to a certain topic that's being addressed. So
my perception and my sense is that a lot of people right now that we like to think are racist might not be. They're just uneducated. They've just been socialized and kind of brainwashed.
Yeah, no, I completely agree with you. That's exactly what my beliefs are. I think we throw that term out too loosely. It's not something that we should just use to attack someone just because they see something differently than you do, or they have a different agenda or political stance. Like, it's a sensitive word to use, and I think I've seen it being thrown around so much. I just wanted to, for us to take a step back and really assess the fact that as much as things may seem like that for some people, maybe that's just not the case because we all come from different lenses. We all come from different
backgrounds.
Yes. And how we've been socialized, or just the things institutionalized.
Right.
Affect how you see some things, and that does not necessarily mean that you're racist. Just because you've been brought up in racist ideology doesn't mean you are.
You made that distinction, racist versus racist ideology, because at the end of the day, it's like this spell that you've fallen under. It's really and truly like the only way of life you know. Like, you grew up with your parents and your family in your community, going to church, being around your little homogenous group. How are you really supposed to be exposed to anything else to know that it's wrong? So this is where the empathy kind of has to come in too. You really have to not take everything so personally. Sometimes it's more of, well, they just don't know any better. So maybe instead of attacking them, maybe I should attack their ignorance.
Thank you. And that's exactly what it comes down to. I think we're doing ourselves a disservice by quickly attacking people as racist just because they have a different point of view. I think it's really that time where I know it's work. It is work. And I feel bad that Black people and people of color have to do that work to be able to empathize in order to educate. But if we really want to make change, that's what we have to do.
Education and, instead of reaction.
Absolutely. And educating, not to be arrogant, but educating to really understand and, you know, making more of an effort to change minds by through sympathy and empathy and understanding and just actively listening to people and stepping outside of our minds and perspectives that, you know what, maybe this person really had a different upbringing than I did. Maybe they, of course, they have a different experience. I mean, I'm Black, African, and they are, you know, of a different ethnicity. Of course, we already bear those different experiences.
We come from different legacies, different oral traditions, different worldviews, ways of thinking about problems.
We're already bearing those differences, then how can't you understand that that person will have a different form of education?
Right. It's almost like different software. All of us are computers. All of us are computers, but all of us got different programs when the computer was purchased. The real question is, do you want to reboot the computer? Let's change the software. And education really is the only way that I can see that happening.
Yeah. There's a huge opportunity for education in this movement. And I want us to be able to be open in providing that across the spectrum.
Mm-hmm.
Like, despite who you're providing it to, but I want us to be able to think outside of the box in knowing that there are different minds that we're dealing with. There's different perspectives that are coming into the conversation, and being empathetic, especially to those that honestly don't know what to do. They don't know how to think about this because they've never had to think about it.
They're in total shock, you know? Like when they wake up and they put on the news and they're drinking coffee with their parents in the morning having breakfast. they have racism in their face. It's all over CNN. And I think there's an interesting idea of spaces. A lot of people just have grown up and are part of spaces. And whether they choose to be in that space or not, that's a different question. But there are certain spaces where certain conversations were just off limits.
Yeah.
Like, you'd look like a crazy person for bringing it up. I mean, I feel like even when I go back home to my country and I'm spending time with my family and, you know, my family members are a little more conservative in their views than mine, I also have to remind myself, you left the island. You met real people all over the world and learned so much. So, of course, you're going to think differently. How could you expect? I can't project my growth onto another person. You meet people where they are. You meet people where they are.
I think that's what we need to do besides just, and I think a lot of that too can be accomplished by just having a conversation with someone that has a probably holds a different point of view than you. Sometimes we want to stay connected just to the people that share the same views or support the things that we support. But how is that helping you grow if you are not? I feel like you're more at an advantage if you're able to see things from a different angle.
If you're just joining us, this is Christoph Kassoun, and you're listening to Navigating Diversity. We're here with guest Alma Jam, and we're discussing the topic, Developing Empathy Through Education. Alma, what is active listening? When we talk about active listening, how do you do that?
Man, for me, it's really actually watching holistically, not only just listening to words of what the person is saying, but relating, having those words connect to their body language. I think that's what I watch. Body language actually tells you so much about how people are feeling about something and so on. It's you making an effort to connect with the emotions that that person is employing through the way, whatever they're trying to say. It takes a lot of effort, and it's something you have to practice.
Yes, it's a lot of work. It is a lot of work. It is not easy to just sit there and quieten your mind and your body and your spirit for 2 minutes to make room for the other person. Because we're always kind of wrapped up in our own minds and our own world, right? This incessant noise going on in your brain all the time, the stream of thoughts. How can you really listen to somebody if that's going on all the time? You need to cut through the noise a little bit. And to me, active listening is meditation. It's being fully present in the moment, you know, giving your full, unfiltered attention and presence and energy towards this person and hearing them out. And the majority of what a lot of us do when we listen is react. If that's you're actively listening, you should not be reacting. And if you feel an emotion or something being triggered in you by what the other person is saying, and you feel the need to interrupt and impose what you're saying onto the conversation instead of letting them speak their truth, or you react and you're undercutting the entire conversation, you have a conversation with yourself.
And that's hard to do, to be honest. Especially when you're having a conversation with someone on controversial topics like this. Personal, you know, arguments or debates that you might have with someone, it's so much more natural for us to just interject when someone says something that maybe was opposing, not accurate of you, or opposes to the view that you have. It's so easy to just interject and try to like clear that out, make clear what you actually think. But I think you're right. Those emotions do come up during that conversation, but active listening really is letting that person speak their truth.
Regardless of how you feel or what you think. And I think when those emotions and those thoughts rise up in you, you know, especially if you're having a very difficult conversation with somebody who totally disagrees with you, it's okay to just feel that and just not judge the feeling and not do anything about it. What he's saying is making me uncomfortable, but I'm going to keep smiling and nodding. And I'm going to keep opening up my shoulders and my chest and let him feel like if I'm listening. It's okay to just sit with that negative response, y'all. That is how we develop empathy and create spaces where we can have real conversations and let them teach you something too.
part of active listening. That's part of empathetic education. It's this cross education experience, actually, because even though you're there with a sole purpose to enlighten someone about a specific topic, you should also be there with an open mind to know that they can teach you something. I mean, that's just how we as humans are. When we have these conversations, we learn something from a person, whether that could be something negative or something positive, but you learn something about a person every time you have a conversation. And if we can just be more open to practicing more active listening and just being empathetic in the way and the approaches and how we do it, I think that could change a lot of things.
Me too. I liked what you said earlier about we're doing almost a disservice to ourselves by just automatically assuming that they hate us. Like, that's not productive. The deeper question is, well, why? Yeah. Why do they think the way they think? Like, who taught them that? What institutions have been teaching that? What type of education did they receive? Did they even learn anything about Black history? These are the big questions. You know, in political sense, we like to say how it's always policies that cause problems, never people.
And I see that in this time and period is even on social media, like, people are attacking people. They're attacking people, but that's not the point. We're trying to attack the system. We're trying to bring the system out and show it for what it is in order to address and fix all those oppressive policies that have been initiated within it. We're not out here to be attacking each other. I mean, that's not the point. Yeah, no, I agree with you. And I love that you brought that out. It's about the policies. When we're having these conversations, we need to be asking questions more like, well, who gave them this education?
Right.
You know, what environment were they raised at? What exposure are they accustomed to? These are the questions that we should be asking instead of attacking individuals.
So, Alma, what advice would you give to anybody listening right now who wants to begin having these more difficult conversations where they have to be a little bit vulnerable and a little bit non-reactive?
Well, besides everything we discussed, I would definitely advise them to also take time to just cleanse.
Yes. And heal and process.
Yes, because these conversations are heavy and they're deep and they're hard to have. And so you, as the person that's facilitating that space to actively listen and understand, you need to take time off for yourself in order to process and just let go and process your feelings too about how you may have felt during those responses, because you're the one doing the deep work when you're opening yourself to be uncomfortable and take in whatever feelings may come from the conversations that you're having. So just take time. If you're willing to put yourself out there to have these conversations, take time for yourself as well to heal in order to stay sane, honestly. Keep your sanity.
I love that. Your sanity is everything. We can't do anything if we don't have that. Thank you so much, Alma.
Thank you, Christoph. Thanks for having me.
Thank you. This is Christoph Kassoun, and you've been listening to Navigating Diversity. Guest Alma Jam and I have been discussing the topics, social movements in the age of social media, and developing empathy through education. Join us next week at 7:30 p.m. on Tuesday as we continue to navigate diversity and explore how human beings differ, yet can find ways to relate to one another in an increasingly xenophobic socio-political climate. For more information on all episodes, visit kisu.org/programs/navigatingdiversity.